Hello, and thank you for listening to the Teaching Math Teaching Podcast. The Teaching Math Teaching Podcast is sponsored by the Association of Mathematics Teacher Educators, a community of math teacher educators learning to teach math teachers better. I'm your co-host, Joel Amidon, and joining me is Jen Wolf. Hey, Jen, how are you?
Hey, Joel. Excited to be here with all our lovely guests. It's going to be an awesome podcast.
This is. So today on this awesome podcast, we're talking with Dr. Kyle Whipple, Associate Professor of Education for Equity and Justice at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, Dr. Enrique Ortiz, Professor of Mathematics Education at the University of Central Florida, Alexa Lee Hassan, Learning Sciences Graduate Student and Mathematics Education Lecturer at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and Dr. Liza Bondurant, Associate Professor at Mississippi State University. We are talking to everyone because they are members of the AMTE Advocacy Committee that's located in the Division of Advocacy, Equity, and Research. And they're going to share some plans the Advocacy Committee is making for the upcoming AMTE conference in February of 2025 in Reno, Nevada, as well as the importance of getting involved and helping others get involved in organizational leadership. All right. Yeah, this is a great room to be a part of. So we're going to go around and get a chance to say hi to everybody, but then also take a second or two or take a moment or two to introduce yourself beyond what I've already shared. What did we miss? So Kyle, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Joel. How are you?
Fantastic.
It is very fun to be here. This is an exceptional group of people. So I'm very grateful that I have this opportunity today. Let's see, beyond what you already shared, I started off teaching math and science in rural Northeast Missouri way back in 1995, and did that for about 20 years before I stepped over into work in the preparation of actual teachers. So I will pass this off to Alexa.
Thank you, Kyle. I'm also very grateful to be here. Originally was a certified to be a K-8 teacher with a specialization in middle school math, and I ended up shifting into teaching like small group intervention and then eventually doing data work for a school that I was working at. And that sort of weird, strange path ended up leading me to grad school in learning sciences, which I've really appreciated. And then my advisor, Dr. Allison Castro Superfine, is involved in pre-service teacher math work. And so through her, I got the opportunity to teach some content courses for pre-service teachers. And I fell in love with that space and those students and have been lucky enough to get a position doing it full time. So it's been great. Awesome. And throwing it to Enrique.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity. My adventure in teaching started in Puerto Rico. I grew up there. Initially, that wasn't what I wanted to be. I wanted to be an artist. And it's weird how things have evolved, and I do both a little bit on combining mathematics and arts. I taught eighth grade mathematics in Puerto Rico and eventually decided to continue my education, did my master, and eventually came to the United States to do my doctoral degree at the Louisiana State University. And eventually got into academia and everything else and that goes with that. Thank you.
Liza.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I appreciate being on here with all of these esteemed colleagues. I guess something that you don't know about me maybe is that a little bit like everyone shared, I have like variety of diverse experiences, I guess geographically. Like I lived in New York 30 years of my life, and I've been in Mississippi for 12, so that was kind of like a geographical shift. And I also have like K-12 experience, mostly middle and high, 8 years in New York. And then I've been down here in Mississippi doing work with pre-service teachers the last 12 years. So yeah, so lots of different experiences have informed where I am now. And I'm glad to be here.
Fantastic. See, learning stuff all the time about people, right? It's great. So we're going to start with a kind of a combined question, because we got a little bit with some of this, what you just shared, but I'm going to open up the door and see if there's anything else you'd want to start with. So Enrique, we're going to start with you. So how did you start teaching math teachers? So if you're like, you want to add anything, like maybe the first course or thing that, you know, the first entry into that space. And then what is the best advice you received when you started teaching math teachers?
Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting question. In my case, I think when I got to, I'm first generation college graduate in my family, and then I didn't have any of the background in terms of what is a university, what do you do to get there. When I got there, then I wanted to be an artist. However, a professor talked me into getting into mathematics. And eventually I realized, well, I like to work with people, and then I decided to go into teaching. And that's how I started getting the training to be a teacher. And eventually I started as a supervisor in Puerto Rico, supervising teachers. And then I wanted to expand that aspect of it. And it's been very interesting, because the part that I like the most is the creativity part, the curriculum, creating curriculum. And that's what I try to instill in students, that to create, keep that open mind and trying to be creative with what they do. Don't be static on one idea, and also provide opportunity for the students to engage and be themselves and have agency for themselves too.
I love that. Like the artist continues on, right? Continues on. That's great. All right. Next, who are we going to do next? Let's see. Kyle, you want to answer that one?
Sure. So as I stated, rural Northeast Missouri, there's a fantastic small liberal arts, public liberal arts school there called Truman State University, that I had graduated with my undergraduate degree and my master's from. And it turned out the person who was teaching there, what was actually a STEM teacher preparation class, their STEM methods class, was retiring, and they needed somebody to fill in while they searched for a full-time person. So I adjuncted in the afternoons. You know, I would teach at my high school from 8 to 2:15, and then start my methods class at 3:30. Because it's such a small school, the combination of STEM there was really nice. I'm certified in both math and science, and so had experience teaching both of those things. And that was a really fun way to slide into teacher preparation. I had almost no inclination that that's a path that I would get so attached to. Literally at the time, it was about money. teachers in rural Northeast Missouri do not make very much money. And I was like, I will take that extra paycheck.
That's right.
And then I was just in love with it almost instantly. Like the way that the students would talk about what they had seen in classes, and you know, what types of responses they need to make when students are stuck and they don't understand a concept. That just really was exciting for me. And I would say that ties in with Enrique, right? That's all creative thinking and creative problem solving. And so, once I sort of got hooked, if you will, to that, when they did go ahead and find a permanent person to take over, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to go do this somewhere else. So left teaching high school to go get my PhD. So, so it was accidental, but joyous.
Yeah. So. No, that's good. Liza, how about you?
So like Enrique, I actually started college as an art major, thinking that I wanted to teach art. I was down near Woodstock at SUNY New Paltz, little flower child. And I knew I wanted to teach, but I did change to math, and then I went back home. So I was at UAlbany, and they didn't have an undergrad education program. So I majored in math. And then to teach, I got emergency license, but I did the Master of Science Secondary Education to get my permanent certification in New York. And then after a few years, UAlbany had this cutting edge nanoscale science and engineering thing built, like chip fab. And I was like, this is fascinating. So I was like, I want to go back to grad school and get a doctor in that. And I thought I was going to be a professor of that. Like, I don't know. I like science too. So I was like, this is the future. So I went through all like the protocol to get like security to get in there and wear those bunny suits and the chip fab. And I took a grad class and I went back to see my master's advisor, Dr. Vic Koba. And I was just like, this is not the right fit for me. And she was like, you know, we have a PhD in math education. And I was like, yes. And I mean, the significance she has had on my life is just profound. I think that I wanted to grow up and be her all along because she was just one of those people that practiced what she preached. Like in her math methods classes, she was always like, she would tell us to use manipulatives and we would use manipulatives. She would tell us to be the guide on the side and she would be the guide on the side. She's always listening. Like, and her mentorship just extended beyond the classroom, which is amazing. So I was just like, I want to grow up and be her. So yeah, that's what the path I pursued.
Nice. And that idea of like doing like, hey, not doing the, my common phrase is the lecture about not lecturing. Right. So like, so Alexa, you touch a little bit on it, but like you have that, what led into that first experience? And then also any advice that you received?
Yeah. And I mean, when I went to grad school, I was interested in, or I'd been doing work with data work at an elementary school and had been doing a lot of work working with administrators and teachers about making sense of data, including like report card stuff that we had control over, progress monitoring that we had like some control over, but needed to be approved by the district, and then like high stakes testing and high stakes assessment. And so I thought I was interested in like assessment and assessment learning. And when I went to grad school, I realized that yes, but I wasn't interested in like the cognitive perspective of like, what is the right way to understand the test? I was interested in what I learned. It's political conocimiento, like the complicated work of figuring out this thing is happening. How do you as a teacher make sense of it and work with students to protect the people that you're working with from harmful parts and like support them in using it from this bigger system and like navigate the bigger system. And I also interested in my life of like, how do people think about math and what counts as math? So I end up teaching as a like graduate student instructor, our math content course for elementary pre-service teachers and got to incorporate some of my research into that. And just, yeah, really loved it. And I think, I think as Enrique said, like the space for creativity there of figuring out what it means to create activities for pre-service teachers to be able to learn content in the ways that we want them to eventually be teaching content. That, like really hopefully positive shifting experience where math can be a creative process and not just regurgitating whatever you're told. And I think one piece of advice for teaching teachers that I was given, and I think it applies to elementary as well, but was highlighting the power of when discussions and conversations happening while the work is still in progress. So figuring out how to support the pre-service teachers in talking with group members and even talking with whole class when they have an answer that's not fully formed. And so it's not the we're polishing it and it's perfect and then we share it, but the power, the mathematical power that comes from talking about ideas that are still in process, and also the kind of community that you have to build to be able to be comfortable doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of that rough draft math idea that Mandy's been talking about, Mandy Jansen, which we can link to because we talked to her about that as well on a previous episode. Awesome. Thanks for sharing. Again, it's great hearing the stories that people share. And I think that's, it's part of the power of, I think, of the podcast is hearing some of those different paths. And also too, like the, we're going to be talking a little bit later about shoulder tapping and Jen, it kind of sounds like there's a little bit, each of these stories has a little bit of shoulder tapping in them as well. So Jen wrote this question and I really like it. And we've inserted it into the podcast. So what is a, and if you have something to share, they'd love to have it, but if you want to pass on it, you can as well. What is a word, phrase, or quote that helps you center the work you do in teaching mathematics teachers? Do you have anything for that?
I have one that I've used in the past, and this one, I struggle with this one. goes like this, I don't know the author of it, tell me and I forget, teach me and I may remember, involve me and I learn. Mm. For me, that goes into, like Lisa was talking about using manipulative, it goes into that, and it also goes into the engagement part that we want in mathematics, and trying to visit all the different types of visualization styles and way of thinking, and being very intentional about doing that. That's what that phrase means to me in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else?
It is kind of weird, but I'll try to explain it. So mine is kind of visual. So I like see a gray circle. So the gray, the significance of the gray is like to try to not think like binaries, like dichotomies, like, you know, like the continuum, like a shade of gray. And then like the circle is like to try to think like, you know, like the paradigm of life is more of a circle than a triangle. And like to try to avoid like those hierarchies. So I just like visualize like a gray circle. Cause like I do have a tendency to kind of think like all or nothing, or, you know, we live in a society that's structured in hierarchies. So we kind of have that tendency. So just like see this gray circle, and that I just like think of that. It's kind of simple and weird, but it works for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
To add
one.
That to our question, like not just a word, phrase, or quote, but is there a visual representation or a gesture or something that centers your work?
Enrique, what were you going to add?
Yeah, with what Lisa was talking about, for me, it also means how sometimes, even in mathematics, that is so structured, there's sometimes there's exceptions to the rules, and those are the hardest to learn and to teach and to get students to actually learn them. And then that gray area, it's very significant, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And if Alexa, did you have one?
Yeah. And I guess it kind of relates to what Enrique just said as well, in terms of thinking about systems. I guess for me, especially when thinking about trying to like humanize the math classroom for students, thinking about balancing systems and relationships, because I want to make sure that there are systems set up, and we think we'll talk later about like thinking about in terms of disability, but like accommodations that are available for everyone in my classroom. And so in that sense, systems of saying, this is available to everybody. You don't have to ask me personally. You don't have to feel like you have that autonomy. Like you don't have to feel like you're taking a risk to say, can I have an extension? Can I use my notes? Can I, whatever? Cause everybody gets to do that. Cause that's the system. But then the relationship that it's balancing systems and relationships, because at the end of the day, a lot of it does have to be about being open to make the kind of relationship that the students feel comfortable with and be as flexible as possible with doing that, but that those relationships are what really support students in learning and becoming comfortable and feeling like they're in a community where they belong.
Nice. We're going to, so the next question, and kind of it feels like we're getting into it. So let's, an advice question. And we kind of adjusted a little bit. So we talk about advice. Usually we just talk about advice straight for someone starting out in math teacher education. But we also, given that this is the advocacy committee, like let's talk about, well, what would advice would you give to someone else starting out either math teacher education or advocacy work, or maybe it's the merging of those two spaces. Cause right. Let's not just do dichotomies here. Right. We could do both. So any advice that you'd like to share with someone starting out in either math teacher education or in advocacy work?
Sure. I can start this one if y'all want.
Awesome. Thanks, Kyle.
My advice for starting out in teaching work really across any content area is that successful teaching is reliant on successful relationships. And I do think this kind of goes back to shoulder tapping, right? Like yeah. When I was shoulder tapped to teach future teachers, that's how I got started in that. And I was shoulder tapped because I had a relationship with someone at the university who thought I might be good at that. I tell my future teachers all the time that it's not the case that you can say I'm not going to get along with this student in my classroom, so they have to be moved to a different classroom. Like that's not how it works. You have to build a relationship, and all of those relationships that you build with your students as a teacher are going to be beneficial to the community of the classroom as a whole and to the school as a whole. Right? It extends beyond your own classroom walls. And I would say the same exact thing is true about advocacy. I didn't really get into advocacy. This is going to shock everyone, but there's not a lot of advocacy happening in rural Northeast Missouri. however, if you go to the Twin Cities, all of a sudden right. There are a lot of advocacy opportunities. And so I started getting active in advocacy as a graduate student. And mostly because I wanted to form relationships with the people who were also being advocates. There are certain things that I just feel like within our systems that need to change. And I don't want to be quiet about it. I would say that in both situations, you know, in the classroom and if you want to start with advocacy, the best thing you can do to start with advocacy is find someone who knows a lot about it and hope that they'll sort of take you under their wing. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
I think the only thing I'd add in relation to that with advocacy in particular is I think sometimes, it goes back to systems and relationships and the importance of relationships. Sometimes we focus on the relationships that we are building with the people that are sort of, I don't want to say like on our side, because it's not always dichotomies, right? But like the people that you're working with to try to create change. And sometimes can think about people in positions of authority as like, oh, but there's a system and they have to follow the rules and they have to do X, Y, Z. So if we make a really convincing case, they just have to do it because it's logical. And I think in some ways the most frustrating thing, but also an important thing to remember is that like, no matter where people are in the layers of the system, there's still people and it's still going to largely end up being tied to emotions and relationships that people have in terms of trying to create change. So you need to be thinking about not just the people that you feel similar to as being people, but trying to like understand the mindset and the perspective of the people that you're working with at all the different levels for advocacy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the advice that was shared with me, it wasn't when I started teaching, but it was about right before COVID. Hortensia Soto shared a little quote with me, and I don't know the person, Mandy Hale, who distributes this quote, but it's to make a difference in someone's life, you don't have to be brilliant, rich, beautiful, or perfect. You just have to care. Because I think that in my 40 some odd years, those are the things I was always striving for. Be brilliant, be rich, be beautiful, be perfect. And it just resonated so much with me because I know, Joel, your research is in agape, like love, but like this like care, like this love, this radical, like that is like the meaning of life. And I think that like, I don't know, for me, like that really like Kyle said, with the relationships, like just caring so much about the students and like wanting to get to know them. I think that that quote really helped me. Like that's how I feel the most successful in this role. And I feel like that's something that we can pass on to them as far as, since they're going to be future teachers. And I also kind of just say to them and tell myself too, like, just be yourself. Like as soon as you start to realize your true authentic self, you're going to be like more happy and you're going to be the best teacher you can be. Yeah.
Nice.
I really like that, because then you can, you know, you can think about what are the ways that we can encourage or co-create these spaces where they feel like they can share with you what they need to feel cared for. Like we can care for them, but how are we getting them involved in the conversation of like, what does it mean to care for you? Like I have these preconceived notions of what I think care is, but in conversation and community, we can make a plan of like, what does it mean? When do you feel cared for? And what are those experiences? So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. For me, I think I could add on into what Lisa is saying and even what Alexa was talking about. And I think this has evolved in me through the years, but it's that the idea that you want to personalize as much as possible with being very sensitive also, because you know how much you want to share, how much you, and in mathematics, usually we don't think in those terms when we teach it. And then how do we bring the humanity, the person, into an activity? And it's very, it's challenging because of the different points of views that are in there. And then also respecting the point of view of the others, but at the same time, without preaching, trying to bring the facts and use the mathematics to make things more alive and factual. And especially now with things that could be manipulated so easily, then making that personal seems to be a way to go. However, being very sensitive and open and non-judgmental in many ways.
Nice. That's great. Just the ideas that they're connecting with regard to relationship, even the sensitivity, you know, and you don't understand those things unless, again, you're building those relationships, right? It's not just not just taking action, right? It's about, again, bridge building, building those relationships, all that. Love it. So let's talk about the work of the advocacy committee. So what plans are, I'll just open it up. What plans does the advocacy committee have for the upcoming conference? And then we don't have to limit to that, as if there's other plans that we could talk about as well. So what's up with the advocacy committee?
Well, we are in our infancy stages, if I can phrase it that way.
Yeah.
We're tiny babies. as we just started our work for the next year. But what we're doing right now is trying to give ourselves a foundation in educating ourselves on disability and disability justice as it applies to mathematics education and mathematical learning. So we have started a annotated bibliography where we have many, many good resources. And at our next meeting, we'll split those up so that we can divide and conquer and try to put together a basis for our luncheon discussion next year, which will be on disability. So
nice. And I guess maybe just describe in the past, like what, because the advocacy luncheon has been something that's been done. So like maybe even talk about what has been done in the past at some of those, in some of those spaces. Does anyone, or if I'm talking beyond this committee, that's, I apologize, but if they'd give a little bit of context.
Yeah. Well, and I will say Kyle and I were both members of the committee last year as mm-hmm. well. And I know last year, partly because of the conference's location in Florida, mm-hmm. but also just in general, yep. Committee members had been, including myself, had been working on issues of like queer and trans, supporting queer and trans students, queer and trans math teacher educators.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a webinar partly connected with the advocacy committee, partly connected sort of higher level with, I'm blanking on what the acronym is. Advocacy is one of the three, what advocacy?
Equity and research?
Equity, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
AER, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we did, there was a webinar thing on trans rights and trying to make people somewhat starting the conversation in what, September or August? Mm-hmm. And then at the conference itself, we were supposed to have a speaker from Equality Florida come talk to everyone. Unfortunately, she had to cancel at the last minute, but we ended up being able to put together a talk for the luncheon to hopefully give people some information about what was happening in Florida, what's happening more nationally, and start some conversations hopefully about how math teachers and math teacher educators can think about supporting their students and pre-service teachers that and peers that may be affected by some of these topics. And then we did have a follow-up session that a couple people came to talking about what does advocacy in action look like and how can we help each other get started in some of that.
Nice. So even some of that advice that given before, like, you know, the thinking about how do we get started with this advocacy work? That's excellent. Anything else that want to talk about with regards to what the work is? So, I mean, again, you're talking about work for next year's conference in 2025 and thinking about the work that you're putting in about, you know, educating yourselves and putting all that work together. I mean, like, I just love hearing that about building the foundation. And so it's not like just, oh, we're just going to throw some slides together. No. We want to make sure to establish, again, the foundation for it. I love that. I love that part of it. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. And I guess the other thing is, I think we are hoping to bring in a speaker again that is an outside expert, as well as like our learning that we're working on. And I think we may be similar to what was done last year, looking for maybe some chances to start conversation in the fall, open to the broader AMTE community. So if there are members of the community that are listening to this, that are not on the committee, but are interested in being involved in disability justice conversations, either at the conference or before the conference, we would absolutely love to hear from people.
Yeah. And we could put links to the committee's page in our show notes so that, again, people want to respond to that call. Again, we'll make those resources available, or make the link available within our show notes. So that's awesome. Again, because it's part of a community, right? And I kind of like that. If it's like there's a kind of a webinar associated with what's going to happen at the conference, that could be a nice pattern to have every year to get people also connected to that conversation, even if maybe they can't be a part of the conference, which like. So a lot of people were not able to last year to come to the, or this last conference to come.
I was just going to add, I am new to this committee and a baby, as Kyle said, but in starting this work, meeting with the committee and this, doing some reading on my own, I guess I just didn't realize how connected this is to a lot of other work that I might have been doing or that I have been doing. And I think that I didn't even realize what disability is like. And I think maybe because of that, similar to the focus for last year, where it was LGBTQ+, like there is some coming out of the closet with disability. And I don't know if people might want to, not be identified that way or labeled that way because of the implications, but like there's emotional, social, behavioral, mental, learning, physical, medical. Like, I just wonder, like, who is disabled? And a very good friend and colleague of mine, Daniel Reinholds, has really informed me a lot about disability. And he has a wonderful website, Signs of Disability. Joel, I would love if you would share it with the listeners. So I encourage the AMT membership to please come to the luncheon and join, because even though I didn't think this was in my wheelhouse, it so totally is connected, for sure.
And I guess, too, that's, you know, we're getting into the next question about shoulder tapping. And on this podcast, Jen, I mean, we've been talking about shoulder tapping for a while, or helping others see their ability, potential to share their perspective and expertise, or just even energy into advance the field or advance the organization. Do you have any, and I guess too, even sharing with Liza, like, hey, I might not even knew what we were going to get into, but then I'm being educated and now I can be a better advocate, right? So do you have any advice for someone who is looking to shoulder tap, or do you have a story of you being shoulder tapped? And we've shared a couple of those already, but maybe it is about advocacy work. So any advice or any advice for shoulder tapping, or any stories about being shoulder tapped that still need to we would like to share?
So I think the big thing is to find something that you're passionate about, and then make sure that you're connecting yourself with folks who are also passionate about that thing, right? You know, I think folks who have a tendency to get shoulder tapped are folks who project just what you said, Joel, some energy, some energy for whatever that topic is. And so, you know, engaging in question and answer sessions after presentations, you know, making sure that you actually take the time to introduce yourself to speakers of a topic that you're interested in. I think that the joy of AMTE is that the shoulder tapping does not feel quite so political, if you will, because our organization is small enough that you can step in as a fairly new member to AMTE and get some recognition relatively quickly. You don't have to have been in AMTE for 20 years to get shoulder tapped for something. So that's my big advice is if you're excited about something and you have some energy you want to put towards it, find the group and they will invite you in. I think AMT is very inclusive that way.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm also new in the committee, and I was shoulder tapped to participate in it, and I'm glad I accepted. I was hesitant at the beginning. I wasn't sure what it was about and the direction we're going to take, but I'm very glad I accepted, and I'm very, very pleased to meet new people and networking in a bit different way. And then I'm really thankful for the opportunity.
Any others?
I guess I would just say, like, for maybe some more novice or even mid or later career folks, I think, you know, that imposter syndrome that we talked about at AMTE, like, it's real and I still have it, but I think that it is because of all the structures, you know, where it's like this person has this position or got published here or whatever. But I've always been the weird fangirl. Like, I do send the emails. I do try to attend everything I can. And I know it's like weird, but like, that's what I do. And I think that because of that, people have shoulder tapped me, and I couldn't even name all the people, but I wish I could, because they have had such a profound impact on my life. And I think we just try to pay that forward. I like the Sir Isaac Newton quote, where it's like, if I've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Like, these people that I thought were giants, like, they're just humans. They're just people, like, just like you and me. And like, then like someone else might see you as a giant or something, you know? So just, I don't know, the community whole reciprocal kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, recently. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Alexa. Sorry.
You can go ahead.
I was just going to say, I recently saw Deborah Ball at a conference, and her work, along with Rico Gutstein's work and others that have, and Magdalene Lampert, that studied their own teaching. It was like, oh, I didn't ever talk to them, but it was like, that was like an imagine, like they were saying like, hey, you, the thing that you like to do, look at your own teaching. And like, there's a place for you here. Right. There's a play. And it was like being shoulder tapped without actually being shoulder tapped, you know, like, so, or attending a webinar, like Alex saying, or Eliza saying, like going into places and seeing some work and be like, oh, that's possible to do that sort of stuff. So I apologize, Alexa, for interfering.
No, it's fine. And I may or may not want to cut the caveat, but I have mixed feelings about sharing this because I feel like it's raining on the shoulder tapping. parade. But I guess my caveat is, as someone who's like currently a grad student and have seen which friends got shoulder tapped for which things and which friends did not, I feel like makes me try to be very, very careful and thoughtful with students in who I'm shoulder tapping, because I think there's a tendency. I mean, there's certainly plenty of research that there's a tendency to shoulder tap people that you think of as similar to yourself. And there's obviously like racial and gender and class axes of that. There's other axes of that. But I think there's also a tendency to shoulder tap people that we see as succeeding in the current system. And I think, especially like for me in my position right now, it's being like, okay, which undergrads maybe should be graders and peer tutors, right? And really trying to push both myself and the people I'm working with to remember that, no, sometimes the best peer tutors are students that struggled with math and then figured it out. The person that is sitting there getting 100% A's on everything, they walked into your class totally confident, may not be the best peer tutor. They might be a great teacher, and that's awesome if they want to. But like, especially as we're talking about disability justice, thinking about not every opportunity requires someone who is getting 100% A's and acing everything. And sometimes the person that has particular experiences of struggle may be able to have the most important insight to share. And sometimes someone who has a hard time with one aspect, like my student that may need to do corrections to bring their test grade up to an A, but makes these incredible visualizations that they can share with the class where everybody looks at it and is like, oh, now I get it. Like, and so making sure that when we're shoulder tapping, hopefully we do that with our students in our classes, but if we're shoulder tapping peers or grad students or whatever, that we're really trying to think about how do we see talents and get perspectives from people who are not just the people that the system already serves, because we don't get to change the system if you're only advocating or like only bringing up the voices that are already acing everything.
Yeah, that might be, I don't know, Alexa, you can correct me, but it might be related to the term they're using now in terms of neurodiversity, in terms of the different ways of thinking and the way of analyzing and looking at things, and how I've been looking, especially with autism, how they sometimes they have some specific superpower that might be hidden with the other things that we see, but we don't see everything in their brains, and how, especially for engineers, they're trying to tap into that, into bringing people from different neuro connections in their brains that will bring in a whole different perspective that nobody will think about, but because of their uniqueness, they bring something from new and different in many cases.
Yeah. And I have mixed feelings and other, I guess, in terms of what Liza mentioned earlier, I do identify as disabled and neurodivergent. And I have mixed feelings about, and I've heard mixed feelings about the like superpower narrative, because sometimes it's really helpful for individuals. Sometimes as a like cultural narrative, it can be problematic. But yeah, the idea of neurodiversity as potential for strength and more diverse insight. And I'm actually, there's a chapter that I'm working on co-writing with some authors, including Katie Roop and Sarah Resvi, about being neurodivergent teachers and educators, and questions of what kinds, from that perspective, what kinds of new futures can we imagine in math education? So yeah, absolutely for neurodivergence being.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Then also, I think it has to do with having a voice and having a seat at the table and being able to have that bringing everybody in. How we call it probably is not that important, but it's important that we are included.
Well, thank you, Alexa, for bringing that point up. I mean, and that's like to be mindful about that, you know, and like we're talking about increasing, like I always think about sensors being flipped on, like shoulder tap, who are we shoulder tap? Why are we shoulder tapping? And like, you know, it's not just, like you said, just everyone who's getting 100% all that. Like, again, there's value in all voices being there. And so, I don't know, I was, if we could, this is an audio medium, but like all the claps and the, you know, snaps that are happening while you're speaking, no, I appreciate that perspective being brought. And like, Jen,
that's important too. Yeah. I was just, sorry, John.
No, I was tossing about, to you. We felt it, right?
Yeah,
there it is.
Yeah, we felt it right there.
Yeah.
What they said made me think about how intent and impact, right? Like, why are you shoulder tapping this person? And then what kind of biases am I going to have to break through? What kind of racist ideas, homophobic ideas, like what are these isms, right, that I'm going to have to really contend with when I think about who am I shoulder tapping and for what reason and why? How am I using my sphere of influence to bring more people to the table that can honor this work, right? But that I can also learn from and with. I don't want to sit around a bunch of people who are like me. Mm-hmm. So how, if I do that, how am I learning from and with other folks? So when you shared that, it just made me think about like intent and impact. Like my intent is to shoulder tap this person, but for what reason? And then what impact will that have in the space that we're trying to make change for when we're doing our advocacy work?
Yeah.
So that's another word or phrase or
something. Yeah.
We can add intent.
That's right.
Impact.
So again, that goes to, you know, folks on this committee are not always going to be on the committee. Folks in my role is vice president of communications outreach. I'll be done with that the next conference. So somebody else is going to have to step in. You know, yeah. So like, there's constantly, you know, these opportunities for people to step in, but then also constant opportunities for how can we mindfully have some I see in you statements. Like I see in you the ability to do what you're. This role that maybe you haven't thought about before, because I know I was shoulder tapped into it. And so one thing we're going to do to make sure to open these up, we're going to talk to a number of the AER committees and to make sure also that this, and we're talking about this idea of shoulder tapping, that volunteer form link that AMTE has. And that's a primary way that we see like where people might have some capacity to serve. And so we'll put that out there. And then so we can, again, mindfully be a part of like thinking about how we can support our the organization through the gifts and abilities that we can bring to the table. So, so thank you for having that conversation. So let's end on, and unless anybody else had anything else to add to that. All right. Again, thank you for your time, but let's end with this. What is something you'd like to do outside of your role as a teacher of math teachers? Make sure we're all, I'm guessing like Enrique, maybe a little bit of art going on. I don't know.
Yeah, that's my safe place.
Yeah, yeah.
When I start doing my drawings and I'm almost doodling, and yeah, that I enjoy that a lot. I feel it calms me and give me a different perspective in life.
Nice.
Altogether.
Fantastic.
Spiritually and everything.
Yeah. Kyle, what do you got going on?
I am an outdoors guy. My favorite thing to do outside of teaching is to be outside. So the Boundary Waters Canoe area, y'all can Google that. And that is where I spend as much time in the summer as possible. It's why I can't keep a Wordle streak. Because you lose internet access. And yeah. That is my favorite. So
awesome. Awesome. Alexa.
Yeah. I started doing boxing almost 10 years ago, and it has been an incredibly, it's the best stress relief ever, because my body, when I'm like stressed and in like fight or flight response, my body gets to feel like it checked off the fight and I won, quote unquote, yeah. Even though I'm not, to be clear, competing in actual boxing matches, but like just the impact of hitting mitts is really cathartic. And then we started doing indoor climbing as a family, my husband, nice. My kid, myself. And that's been fun to have something that you can see yourself getting better at over time, but also space to be like not great at something.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be okay, I think, is really nice.
Awesome. Great. Liza?
They made it way too easy for me, because if I could combine all three of what they said, that's when I feel the most alive, when I'm moving my body outside in some kind of artistic way, like involving art. I mean, I like to make art, but like I love music too. So those are all things that I also love to do outside of math education.
Nice. Wonderful. Thanks for sharing all that. Alexa, what you said about the boxing, I got away from jujitsu during the pandemic, obviously. But I need to get back, because there is something about like one, being bad at something and, you know, over and over, but then also two, just the physical exertion and stuff like that. That's like, I need that as a, like, to release some of that stress and things. I don't know. Jen, you got any new hobbies?
No, I like all those things. I like the creative expression through art, but I also am doing boxing. And it's a former student of mine who's been teaching in high school for a couple of years that we box every Saturday, and he's a great coach. And I feel the same way. Sometimes I like these things because it's nice to be in a space where I don't have to have my math teacher educator hat on. And I can be with my friends and family. And I actually like that they don't know the work that I do sometimes, because like, oh, you're a professor at a university. Yeah. Yeah, whatever. That's not important. I want to get to know you and who you are. So finding like outlets where I can engage in kind of my whole self outside of being an MTE is cathartic sometimes, I think.
Well, and if you had the hat on,
I appreciate everyone sharing.
You get it knocked off. If you had the hat on.
There we go. Right. There you go.
It's a boxing joke. Okay. Yeah. That's all good. All right. So I got some things. We mentioned some links that we'll put in the show notes. Anything else to promote or share? Alexa, you mentioned like there's a book chapter in the near future, you know, possibly. So coming up. So anything else to share? And we can, again, put links in the show notes for any of these things or opportunities. Guess to stay tuned for the conference and the possible webinar in the fall. Anything else?
Courtney Kessler and I are presenting at the NCTE NCTM Combo Conference, and I'm excited about that.
Nice. And that's is that June or July?
Yeah, it's June, and it's in New Orleans.
New Orleans, not too far from us Mississippi folk. Anything else?
This coming Monday is the deadline for posters and presentations for MAA Math Fest. Hortensia Soto is the president, and she is a math educator, and she's really making space for us at MAA Math Fest. So I would encourage folks, it's this coming Monday, MAA Math Fest. Poster or presentation will be in Indianapolis. So I'd encourage folks for that. Joel, you know this because you are one of the authors of the chapters, but we have a book coming out on centering equity in approximations of practice. And I think that will be out this summer, July. If anyone's going down under to Sydney, I will also be there. We're talking about math identity, which I think is relevant to this work. So those are some things coming up.
And what's in Sydney? Sorry.
It's ICME. I think it's every 4 years. Yeah.
Okay. And then anything else?
I do have a presentation on Friday for the AARA conference coming in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then next year in NCTM, I will have a workshop about using games in mathematics.
Nice. Very good. And then also too, the conference proposals, they're due by May 15th, I believe. So I think, anything else, Jen, anything else from you?
Okay. Sorry.
No, that sounds good.
All right. And Alexa, anything from you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think it got mentioned, but the AMTE Professional Book Series Volume 6, Building Community to Center Equity and Justice in Mathematics Teacher Education, is coming out this summer. And I have a chapter that I co-authored with some other people at UIC talking about doing a math building community in a math education journal club type space, but trying to move doing that in a math department where most people are not necessarily math ed can look like.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for sharing your time and expertise and also just the great conversation that we had. Thank you for that. And thanks again to all you out there for listening to the Teaching Math Teaching Podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, review, I'll do all that good stuff for the podcast. And we hope that you're able to take action on something that you just heard and interact with other math teacher educators and build those relationships. Also, did you know that the AMTE has another podcast, the Mathematics Teacher Educator Podcast? The MTE podcast accompanies the latest edition of the Mathematics Teacher Educator Journal and has authors discuss the work they have submitted for publication. Find a link to the MTE podcast in the show notes for this episode.